a self-fulfilling prophecy, obviously. If you don't stay with it, you couldn't possibly get the benefits, but it should be obvious as well that the longer you stay with something, the greater the opportunity you have to experience whatever there is to experience.
Right, and then what does it mean to stay with it? People, it's the most common question. And the first question, how long will it take and how long do I have to practice a day? And there's really no answer to that because you can get a lot of benefit from practicing 15 minutes three times a week. So people need to start where they are and, you know, just do and practice in a way that they're enjoying it. And just start with a few minutes a day and a few poses, and they'll get benefit even from that.
So they don't have to do, you know, 20, 30, 40 different movements at a time in order to fully get what's available.
You don't. And as they progress, they can understand what a well-balanced practice is, and it's sort of analogous to, you know, getting all your vitamins, minerals, fats, and oils. So there are certain classes of postures you want to include, like forward bends, back bends, twists, relaxing poses, inversions, and things like that. And as you develop your repertoire in yoga, it's pretty easy to do it.
You know, I'm wondering as well that yoga obviously has taken off in the United States. And you mentioned it came, in the 1900s originally. But the 60s and 70s were truly the great explosion. I was just wondering if at that same time, if China, for example, would have been more open, mainland China, and they hadn't been going through all the different turmoil that they were going through with their own practices of thousands of years, the Tai Chi and so forth, do you think that it might have been different? Do you think that the kind of the Chinese model might have made as much inroads as the one from India? Because at the time, obviously, India was much more accessible.
Well, as I said earlier, I'm all for combining and synthesizing various lineages and systems and taking the best of what works. And I feel that, you know, I have great respect and appreciation for Tai Chi and some of the Chinese practices, and we've used integrated some of those things into yoga. But I also don't think it is anywhere near as complete as yoga. So I think that's more of the reason yoga's gotten so big than just because of China being closed. But yoga is such a holistic system and has body, mind, spirit, and even within the body, forward bends, back bends, twists, inversions, every kind of movement, and a whole complete system of breathing. So I think it took off because of its depth and its breadth.
Do you think that yoga could ever be understood or mastered if you didn't also have a concomitant understanding of the breath and breathing as it applies to movement?
You know, there's a lot, just by doing the postures, you can't help but getting a lot of breathing effects on your respiratory system and your breath. So you don't really have to have a breathing practice because the postures just bring it about. They go together. There are teachers who teach no breathing, but their students still get a lot of the benefits. But to go really deep, you have to do some conscious work with the breath, either by itself or within the postures, because it's so powerful. The breath is connected to everything. It's the root of life force and healing and pain and emotional states are all related to our breath. For example, I had the opportunity to work with Cleve Baxter, the world-famous polygraph expert, lie detector expert, in the early 70s. And the first thing he taught me is that the most important measurement on the lie detector test is breath. That's where you cannot fool the machine because your breath is so sensitive to your emotional state and your truthfulness and so on.
So does that mean you've learned that and I should never depose you?
I don't know if I can beat it.
But then the practice itself, though, is it that, again, that you don't necessarily have to cultivate the breath, but you start becoming aware of it? Because I suspect a lot of folks, obviously, as in most fundamental processes of life, we just take it for granted. But understanding that it is related, as you say, to different states and does different things when you do different movements, for example, that obviously would be a beginning in terms of awareness.
There, absolutely. And there, you know, there are breathing practices which you can sit down and do for 15 minutes or half an hour, but there are a couple of the most powerful breath techniques which don't take very long for the average person to learn, and you can use them when you're talking to someone before you do something important. Like if I was going to get nervous before this show, I could do that breathing technique for a couple of minutes, and it completely releases your tension and balances your system. I can't imagine not knowing how to do that. It's so valuable and so useful.
And something can you relate it in any way on the radio at this point, or is it something we have to see or understand?
Really, it's really difficult to teach except in person. But basically, when you whisper, when you say the word whisper, if you prolong the R, what you're doing when you're whispering is you're constricting your throat. Most people don't realize it, but you're making a very small wind passage through your throat, which creates a sound. And that's when you whisper, that whispering sound. And that is the technique. You learn how to breathe that way, first through the mouth, and then you learn how to do the same thing through your nose. And when you can smooth it out, there's no way you can have agitation or tension in your brain when you're doing that technique and keeping your breath smooth. So you can use it on a plane or whenever you're nervous, or you can also use it to recharge. It's very powerful and very effective and very easy.
By any chance, would that happen to be something you show on the videos?
Yes, you can get it from the videos. We have a whole Total Yoga series for all levels, Total Yoga Earth, Water, and Fire. Fire is very strong for, very fit people. And they're pretty widely available or on our website. And they can learn that breathing right in the beginning on those videos.
Super. And what's the website?
It's whitelotus.com.
Just
whitelotus.com. whitelotus.com.
.com. Okay, it's not .org, it's .com.
Actually,
right?
We have both. It's .com or .org. They're both our website. And my book's on there, too, Yoga Beyond Belief.
Okay, super. Well, I've got the book, and if the videos are as good as the book, then I'm in Fat City here.
Well, thank you.
The videos, though, I mean, is it really the kind of thing that if I see it, I can implement it without the benefit of you or some of the people that you've trained there at White Lotus in order to really be able to do it?
Absolutely. There's a lot of detailed instruction, and the first one is only 20 or 30 minute practice, so just about anybody can do it. And there's good visuals, but there's also very good verbal instruction. So they're designed to follow along, and they became the number one best-selling yoga video of all time. So must be working.
Wow! All right, and I suspect, though, I shouldn't kind of reveal my dirty underwear here, but having been very involved in yoga at one time and very flexible, and then gotten off into a tangent for some time with weightlifting, which I still do, and as you say, you can incorporate it all together, and kind of, as the Righteous Brothers say, lost that love and feeling. How much can you get back, or how much do you need to get back in order to, again, function in a nice, comfortable way?
You mentioned that student of mine. I tell the story about who was a court reporter who had to sit for 10 hours a day, and it totally amazed me when I first started teaching how flexible he got, and he was 40-something when he started. You can get a lot of flexibility back. I've worked with people that started in their 70s, and they got a lot of flexibility back. And especially if you had it once before, it's still in there somewhere, if that makes any sense. So even, if you used to do yoga, you'll regain that flexibility.
And well, I can actually relate that in terms of the bodybuilding or strength training. They call it muscle memory. Something that you've done that, yes, it's still there, and you just have to learn how to kind of get back to it.
Yeah, and in the same way, as you progress at yoga, it takes less to maintain yourself. I still like to have a good long practice, but I can do 5 or 10 minutes and maintain my flexibility probably for years and years because I already have it.
What about the availability of people that you've trained, that you've taught? Is there a network of folks I know that who have come through your teaching programs?
There is. We have teachers all over the country, but they're not on our website yet. We have that in the works, and they'll be able to find those teachers, but people can also just email us through the website, and we'll tell them if there's one in their city. But we're going to be getting that organized. We've been a little lax on that.
Now, just as you talk in the book and you explain the process by which you've come to the understanding that you've come to, and it's been a process, an evolution for yourself, and an exploration within yourself, you also, and I don't know if it relates to it, but you talk about kind of an intuitive type of yoga. Would one kind of proceed on their own in that same way? I mean, obviously when they start learning what you teach, would there also be a natural progression where you would just kind of go where you decide to go in that you don't necessarily have to follow the company line all the time?
Well, I talk about a lot of different kind of polarities, and one of them is between practice, personal practice and group or led practice by a teacher, and they both have their uniqueness and their value. Personal practice is very important, so even if someone takes a lot of classes, they eventually want to develop a personal practice that's uniquely for them. And you mentioned earlier on, like this book, Yoga Beyond Belief, doesn't have pictures of asanas. It's not a book of postures that tell you how to get into the posture and so on. There's so many books that do that. It tells you how to understand the inner process in your own practice. Even if you're not doing yoga, it can apply to weightlifting or any form of fitness you're practicing. There are so many principles in the book that you can learn to understand what's happening with your joints and your bones and your muscles and your endocrine system and your circulatory system. So you can begin to refine and tune your personal practice or your group practice when you take yoga with somebody else.
Yeah, and again, that's what I gleaned as well, that as you showed, you know, after you go through all of the processes here, it's again, just kind of like a metaphor for life in general, or a life that is, what do they say, a life that isn't examined as a life that isn't worth living.
Exactly.
And that's essentially what you're doing. You're showing us how to be aware of all the different things that make up who you are, to understand which ones you need to pay more attention to and which ones you can let go or understand how to let go.
Yeah, and the chapters on meditation and spirituality have the same perspective. In other words, people usually define meditation as sitting with your eyes closed and doing a certain breathing or focusing on a candle flame, and that's a very useful practice. But I define it more broadly as meditation is your whole life, and you can make everything you do into a learning, growth experience that increases your wisdom and your insight and your spirituality, so that it doesn't take time. And you can similarly do that with the asanas. There are things you can do during the day that take no time that keep you strong and flexible.
Well, and again, those are very, very valuable insights. And for that reason alone, I recommend the book, Yoga Beyond Belief. And speaking of belief, did you ever think that back in 1967, when you started this practice, you'd be ending up at this beautiful retreat in Santa Barbara?
Yes, when I first started yoga, I stayed in yoga retreats in India and also in Canada. So I really liked the opportunity where you could come on a retreat and just have total immersion and the right food and have all your questions answered and live the experience for a few days or a week. And that's why we created White Lotus, so people could have a live-in experience.
All right, and that's www.whitelotus.com or whitelotus.org. Ganga White, our special guest. Ganga, it's been a joy. I really appreciate the insights and the sharing. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Terry.